Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories, on, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you miss the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people build community food projects. We know that people all over New York City know that we need to change our food system, and they want to make that change. But so often, people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour to introduce you to someone who started, taking her passion and skill to bring change. Hopefully, her story will help inspire you to create your own Just Food story. So I'm very excited to be here in the studio today with Anandi Premlal. And Anandi is, I was saying earlier, Anandi is kind of like the consummate eco-agricultural citizen of New York City. Like, if everybody in New York City was like Anandi, we'd have every roof would be green, every sidewalk would be green and edible, and the whole, I mean, I just feel like it's, so she's done everything. She's a master composter. She's a citizen pruner. She's a care captain for a Million Trees Initiative. She's an urban farmer. She's apprenticing at the Earth Matter Farm on Governor's Island. She's a farm school NYC student. And on top of all that, she's a real public champion for these things because she founded SDQ, which is a Sustainable Queens Grassroots Initiative. And there's so much more, but we'll delve into that all in the next half hour. So Anandi, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jackie.
And also, I just want to point out that even though this wasn't the last guest last week, but the last time I was in the studio 2 weeks ago, I also had a guest who is a Guyanese native. So I feel like I'm on a little Guyana kick, and I'm wondering, is there something about Guyana that like just makes people come to New York City and then fix us?
I don't know if it's so much as fixing, but Guyana is this beautiful tropical place with the coconut trees, mango trees, guava, bananas. It's just an edible paradise.
I guess it makes you want to have an edible paradise wherever you go.
Right. So, you know, being born there and growing up with that and then coming to New York, settling in Queens, my goal has been figuring out, I was like, there's something here that I want. There's something that I want to, you know, recreate in my community, and how can I create this edible paradise in an urban city girl kind of way, coming from this third world country, you know?
So how do you do that? What was that spark? How old were you when you started to kind of like, when you were like, this is what I'm going to be doing with all of my time, with all of my life, which it really seems like every instant of your waking hour you are spending towards that quest.
It does. Probably in my dreams as well, which I'm sure.
I think probably, yeah.
I could say part of it began when I was, you know, way back, you know, in Guyana, and one of my first little jobs was picking up the cow dung.
So I guess. Wait, how old were you when you were running around picking up cow patties?
Like 3, 4, 5.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so that was a job. That was a chore. Was that a job or a chore? Was that what you were doing for fun because you were a kid and you're getting in trouble?
Maybe a bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, I knew we were using it in the garden and it was super healthy, and there was just that, I don't know, it smelled good too. Like, it's just that kind of like country smell. Uh-huh. And I was like, so it's very familiar.
Yeah.
And I think that there was something that sparked there. Uh-huh. You know, maybe coming here, it's like, where's the cow? You know, as a kid.
How old were you when you moved to New York?
I was 5.
You were 5. Okay. So, yeah. But that's it. That's amazing that you were such a young person exposed to that kind of edible paradise. And mm-hmm. But it was such a deep, you know, it had such a deep impact on you, on the forming of you.
Absolutely.
So, okay, let's see. Where do we start? So one of the reasons why I was very excited to have you here is because I feel like our guests have been very, you know, they've been from Bronx, they've been from Brooklyn, they've been from Manhattan, but I don't think I've had another Queens guest here yet. So I feel like Queens as a borough, there's like tremendous, obviously, potential for this movement, for the eco-urban agriculture movement, but it hasn't really become known for that or become trendy for that or whatever it is. So like, you are really working to build coalitions and to build citizen action around these issues. What are the challenges of doing that in Queens, and why is Queens kind of prime for that work?
I feel that Queens is probably, to me, the best borough of all. And
all right, sell us on Queens. What's awesome about Queens?
Queens is the most diverse place in New York City, and New York City being the most diverse place
right.
in the U.S. than right. on Earth. So we're in the most diverse place with the most delicious immigrant cultures and foods.
Right. It's the place to eat, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely the place to eat. Uh-huh. So... And I feel that there's just so much, like, the communities and everybody really still holds on to their culture. So it's like you're traveling around the world just being in Queens.
I think you're selling it really well. But in terms of urban agriculture, like, the community garden movement is not visible in Queens in the same way that it is in other parts of the city. And just the land regime, the land use in Queens is so different. So What tell me about doing that work in Queens then?
So in Queens, there's a lot more homes mm-hmm. and like one to two stories or possibly more, and with potential backyards or front yards.
Right. Most of Queens feels a little bit more suburban.
Right. It does feel a little more suburban. And I think within the pockets of communities, because you'll find like, okay, there'll be like Little Guyana, you know, which is uh-huh. my neighborhood, and uh-huh. like in Richmond Hill, South Ozone Park, and there'll be, you know, other areas, Jackson Heights will be the more like South Asian, mm-hmm. Indian flavor, although a lot of that's coming down to my neighborhood. And so while, you know, I noticed and we grew, you know, tomatoes and everything in our backyard in Queens, but there was no other place around. There was no land really that we could gather as a community mm-hmm. to grow together. Mm-hmm. So it's like everybody maybe kind of did their little thing, but using soil that was not necessarily healthy, not testing anything, using Miracle-Gro products. That's just like what we were exposed to there. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, Queens has the least amount of community gardens of mm-hmm. all. And I think that's part of some of the policies. And even with the community boards, they say, well, everybody has a backyard, so we don't need community gardens.
Mm-hmm. And but as you pointed out, if you don't have community gardens, then this is a very private enterprise, but people don't have a place to grow together.
Right.
And so you're really working to change that. And one of the reasons why what prompted me to bring you in is because I know that you're working on developing a Queens Urban Agriculture Coalition, which what's the impetus behind that, and how are you envisioning the creation of that coalition?
So I see it as a co-creation between other urban eggsters, anyone who's into composting, tree care. I feel like if you're doing anything that touches the earth mm-hmm. in that way, then being part of this group would be essential mm-hmm. to transforming not just the landscape, but the community and being a support for each other. The other thing about Queens is so vast mm-hmm. and transit is limiting mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in many areas. And so sometimes getting around from one neighborhood to another creates an obstacle.
Right.
And just being, you know, from north, south, east, west, it could take 2 hours sometimes to get from one part of Queens
right.
to another.
Right, right.
So being able to gather with others who are doing, you know, this type of work, sometimes like, oh, great, I'd like to come there, but it's going to take me,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
really
how do you
long
connect
trek.
Those people who are so geographically and then with transportation barriers so separated? Mm-hmm. So how are you working to overcome that? That's a really big obstacle.
Yeah, and that's one of the primary reasons for starting this coalition, mm-hmm. because there are pockets, like in Western Queens, there's amazing work that's going on in terms of composting, urban farming,
right.
and tree care, and in the Rockaways, and some in Jamaica, but then we're all scattered, and through other organizations like, you know, 596 Acres, where we're looking at land, and Green Thumb, and Brooklyn Queens Land Trust, there are others who have come across similar struggles. They're like, mm-hmm. okay, we're looking for, you know, we see this vacant piece of land and we want to grow something there. And I'm a fan of, you know, yeah. guerrilla gardening and tactical urbanism. So I'm like, all right, let's just get in there
yeah,
and
yeah.
do this. And at the same time, as well, looking at like, okay, we can do this. And then also, you know, what can we do officially to be able to make this more of a common thing within our neighborhood, and not everybody has to go through the same drawn out process to
right.
make it happen.
Because then it seems like, I mean, and I know that there are some supports in place, but at the same time, it does often feel like you have to, you're fighting those battles then all by yourself, even if other people have done it before. And, so I'd love to share with our listeners a little bit about the work that you guys, that you and your community have been doing. I read on the SESTQ website that you guys are developing a new garden, an anti-cancer garden, and that was a land access issue. And I would love to hear about like, how did you go about that? What are the steps? Can you walk us through it? And then like, what advice would you have for people who are looking at a similar opportunity/battle?
Okay. I mean, when I walk down the street now, I'm always looking like, where can I plant? Where can I grow things? Mm-hmm. And then looking at spaces within the community, because a lot of them weren't necessarily mapped out mm-hmm. in that area. And there was a particular lot, in Richmond Hill, that growing up there, I've seen it was just covered in weeds for years, over 20 years. And then now suddenly it was cleaned up, but mm-hmm. it was gated and there was nothing going on there. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, we could potentially do something here. I see land there and we're like, let's grow some food mm-hmm. or let's create, you know, space for some healing herbs. So looking at that space, going to either the 596 acre site to look up what land is available there mm-hmm. or also...
And just in case listeners don't know, the 596 acre site is designed to help people who are seeing a piece of land and thinking basically what you're thinking.
Right.
Like, how do I get in there and get my fingers mm-hmm. in that dirt and make it grow? Mm-hmm. Keep on going. Yes.
So previously, mainly when I was looking up spaces, it was through Oasis, which is a similar
mapping
site.
System. Yep.
But it didn't give you necessarily all the connections that you needed. So so now you could look it up and find, okay, who are the politicians in your area? Which community?
And all of
board.
That is on the 596
yes.
acre site? Okay, great.
You'd find links to it. And if not, there's a link to say, hey, find your local politicians and, mm-hmm. and your groups here. And so you look that up, find the group, find out, you know, create some interest in the area. Do other people want to do this? Mm-hmm. And then also speaking to groups like Green Thumb, mm-hmm. speaking to, like, I was reaching out to everyone. I'm like, how can we make this? How can we do this? Besides me just, like, seed bombing it.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's the thing, in Queens, it's more of a residential area. So right. things are very specific in terms of zoning, in particular, in certain neighborhoods.
Sure.
And being the area I live in, a lot of it falls under Sandy impacted areas. Uh-huh. So these types of projects may not take precedence, you know, understandably uh-huh. over what's going on right now in terms of rebuilding the city.
Right, right.
So while it's like, it might be nice and it might be great. It's
hard
not the
to
number
get
one
people's
priority.
Attention to, or to focus on it with everything else going on.
Right.
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 So you identify the piece of land, you went to 596 acres, you figured out who were the local electeds who had jurisdiction over that area, you went to different organizations to see who could support you, but have you been able to progress past that point, and what has that looked like?
So what you could look up also on there, which I forgot to mention, is like who owns, you know, who has jurisdiction over the land, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not the politicians, but it's either the city or a private.
Right. Who owns.
Right.
Who owns. Okay.
And on 596 acres, it's all public. They won't have any private land.
Okay.
On there.
So whether it's Department of Transportation or housing
DCAS,
or.
Right.
Okay. Great.
You'll see there. And then the process, you know, one of the processes is trying to reach someone there. Mm. And have yes. them respond to you. And sometimes that could take months
right.
to have an answer. And then going through, okay, what's needed. And sometimes, like, especially for this particular piece of land, there was no clear answer mm-hmm. in terms of can we use it or not. There's like, oh, there's a possibility that you could have this land, but go mm-hmm. ahead and go through this process and go through the entire, you know, roadmap. So there's a map and I'm looking at this. I'm like, okay, if you're saying I need... you know, to provide, you know, this whole plan and get all the signatures and all these things in place, are you saying then that the land is, it's a go ahead that yeah. we can now do this? So it's still kind of like a fuzzy.
So it's a question of how much area. Work do you have to do before you find out whether or not you're working towards your goal or just kind of doing work.
Right.
All right. Well, then let's take a quick break and we have to break for one of our supporters, and then we will be right back with Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org.
Lady, me and baby dots, playing till they call the cops, call us the California honey drops. A little young, a little old, with a little bit of soul, here's a little something you ain't heard before. We played on the street, we made a little coin, built a time machine and picked up Mr. Boynes. Everybody's having fun, and we only just begun. We gonna party till the morning come. We gonna party till the morning come.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
A little young, a little old, with a little bit of soul. Here's a little something you ain't heard before.
Well, we don't play for food, we don't play for money. All we wanna do is give you some of our honey. Okay.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and we're here with Anandi Premlal and talking about all things growing and good and challenging and in Queens. So we were just talking about identifying a piece of land and the process that you've been going through and to figure out whether or not you can have access to it and grow there. And I know that one of the things, or it's already being called an anti-cancer garden. So where are you in the arc towards that dream? Are you kind of like now stuck in the gears of the system as you try to figure out how you can get access to that? Or are you do you feel like you're further along than that right now?
We're a little further along. We had a great community design session.
Oh, that's
where
great.
About 30 people showed up, and half of them were high school students.
No way!
Yeah.
Okay, how did that happen? How do you get so many youth into the room? That is such a cool thing. What happened?
Well, part of it was partnering with great groups like Indo-Caribbean Alliance, who have been amazing allies in the community.
Yeah.
And then I'd spoken to a great leadership group at Richmond Hill High School, South Asian Youth Action,
uh-huh.
and inspired them to create some projects in the neighborhood, start their own group. And we're doing some amazing work on Liberty Avenue in terms of cleaning, greening, beautifying. And so I was surprised. I was expecting maybe 10 people, and then suddenly, whoosh.
Oh, that's amazing.
Everyone showed up.
It's all about finding the right partners in your community.
Yes.
And you have done such a good job of finding partners, of making partnerships and alliances. How do you do that, Anandi? Is that just being you? Is that just being your sparkly self? Like, how do you find these groups? How do you make partnerships with these groups?
A lot of it is being out there in the community, listening. Mm-hmm. Listening is a big part of it, as to like what people want, what the community needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then also saying, okay, what resources do we have? You know, the students, you know, do need community service work, and they are really actually interested in having a beautiful neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, because we're walking down, coming off the A train, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is kind of funky. There's a lot of trash here, and we're kind of embarrassed to bring our friends and family in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they've been motivated to do that, and that's been a recurring theme that, you know, that we do want to live in a beautiful you know, in a beautiful place that we're proud of. And that we also want to be able to grow some of the food that we know from, like, way back in the, you know, in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can we do that here? And I was like, well, we could, you know, start like digging up the sidewalks and,
yeah,
and
I
grow
love
some
it.
Hot peppers.
And so they came and they contributed to this community design session.
Yeah. And the design session, and then now collecting letters of support.
And are the youth helping with that, or is that
the youth,
like,
are helping with that? They're
awesome.
Writing letters, and we're getting letters from other groups in the community, and then presenting that, working on a presentation for the community board, and also then from then it goes on to Green Thumb, uh-huh. and the big wait.
How could anybody say no to this? This just sounds so awesome. So, what was the impetus behind it being an anti-cancer garden? And what was that conversation like with so many young people in the room?
Well, beyond just being a regular garden, seeing that how plants have the ability to heal,
mm-hmm.
Has this kind of a magical theme about it. And,
yeah.
And I think both youth and the elders that also came to participate were very interested in that, and coming from cultures which have a background in utilizing, you know, bush medicine or you know, whatever native plants are around, like Farmer Young, you know, and what she does with her urban farm in the neighborhood.
Yes, and she was my last guest 2 weeks ago.
So, you know, being inspired by that, by, you know, just really looking at, okay, yes, you know, having a garden is great, but how can we really, you know, put the focus on food and plants as something that's, like, really super essential.
Mm-hmm.
To our survival,
mm-hmm.
because I think that focus has been shifted, and with all these food products and things that are confusing now, it's like, okay, let's look at this, let's look at these. And there was an amazing woman that created an art project called the Anti-Cancer Garden. She Beatriz, and she has passed on. And then seeing that, I'm like, okay, it would be great to, like, carry this on. And to be able to create this, because that was her dream.
Oh, wow.
As well. And there's a group in Croatia that reached out to me just the other day. And they're like,
oh,
we're creating
goodness.
This. And how can we participate? And they sent a bunch of links and information. So I'm like, wow, we could create anti-cancer gardens all around the world.
It's become international.
How amazing would that be?
That is amazing. And I love the fact that you are so integrated in your approach. You know, I think that this is you personally. Like, you bring art, you bring healing, you bring and urban agriculture, and, you know, all of these things for you. I feel like you see it as one big piece of fabric that all kind of weaves together. How do you feel like that, like, does that help you to reach into other communities and bring more different kinds of people together because you have that kind of, like, very faceted focus or faceted approach, I think?
I think it does help. And then I also have my permaculture design certificate and studied
That's not on the list.
No. I'm like, I forgot to put that on there.
You did.
I mean, studying with Starhawk.
Wow.
You know, and becoming an earth, you know, activist, and it's called EAT as well, you know? And I was like, oh.
Wait, what's called EAT?
The, like, earth activist training.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh, okay. That's perfect.
Oh, God, it all comes together.
and in that way, you know, maybe there's a lot of, and I'm part of also leading and organizing the Women in Permaculture conferences here at Omega Institute.
You
I was
are.
Part of the original one last year and then stepped up to help with a group to help lead it this year.
Wow.
And looking at that, because that word is limiting to people who have done this work in the past. It was not known or labeled as permaculture, but it was just the way that indigenous cultures and people grew and utilized the land and looked at the landscape, the animals, everything as unified as one.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stumbled upon it, I was like, oh, this is perfect, because this is, like, what I believe and how I see the world and everything connected.
Can you unpack permaculture just a little bit? I feel like it's something that people feel like they know what that means, but then, like, don't actually know what it means sometimes.
Okay. So permaculture is creating systems or designing systems, or, you know, what I see as, like, spaces that nurture people, plants, the plant, and the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So in ways that are beneficial to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're utilizing solar panels, so a lot of things that are out there already
mm-hmm.
are a part of permaculture, whether it's composting, I'm sorry, seed balls, guerrilla gardening, food forests, mm-hmm. all of these, so much of what we do, and even like community, social permaculture, gathering and creating. So even the Queens Urban Ag Coalition,
uh-huh.
you know, that's a form of social permaculture in like how we interact as human beings with each other as a community. Working towards, you know, policy that would benefit us.
Right.
You know, working towards creating, you know, the not just the community in Queens, but imagine if then there could be little Queens like all over the place.
So, yeah. So it's really the whole system. It's a whole system approach.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all building up for you towards one bigger dream. You were telling me during the break that you have this larger dream. Can you tell us a little bit about that vision that you have?
Yes.
Your grand plan.
So my grand plan with SUSDQ or Sustainable Queens is to create a sustainable ecosystem, and one that, and I know sustainable and sustainability has become such a buzzword right mm-hmm. now, but in one that really supports that, you know, so financially, you know, so it's going to transform from this like, community group into a social enterprise mm-hmm. so that we can provide work in the community, that we can create a farm where we are growing food that people, the residents in our neighborhoods enjoy and want, and food that's also affordable, you know, because as much as I love a lot of the CSA models and things like that, coming up with and the conversations I've had, it's still a lot of money mm-hmm. for people to come up with in a chunk. So finding ways like meeting, listening for, and also finding ways that work with the community and creating, you know, having bees and, you know, I'd love to have goats as well, and definitely chickens.
I know the quiet campaign for urban goat keeping. You'll find champions for this all over when you start to talk about it.
Yeah,
not legal right now, everybody, just so you know. But you know, we can keep the dream alive. So I love the way that you're thinking about this, because you're thinking both in terms of jobs creation and then income generation, so that people can then have access. So you're both producing and creating an economy, and then you have the means to consume, and you're both, you know, so I think it's so important when you look at food system challenges that there's like both not access and there's not the means. I love that your vision is that holistic.
Thank you.
How are you chasing that dream right now?
Step by step. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, reaching out, I'm like, okay, it's time to make this happen, because I've been working on it and creating in small ways, you know, throughout the years. And I just feel like now is the time, like this is the time right now to really go ahead, get the plan together, pull out all support systems to be like, okay, what do we need? You know, where's the space? How can we make this happen? Maybe there's a, you know, a building design company that wants to like chip in and say, hey, we want to create this like awesome space for you here.
I mean, I think that it's hard to listen to this and not get excited about it and not want to kind of like come join your team, do this thing with, like, I feel like you have this infectious energy and enthusiasm for the work and also this beautiful vision. So if people are listening and want to join you and want to do this work in partnership with you, how can they find you and how can they do this with you?
Okay, so you could find all over social media.
We are all over social media.
And so we have SUSDQ.com. We're also on Facebook.com/SUSDQ. I'm at, everything for me is at AA Premlal.
Mm-hmm.
So
PREMLALL.
Yes, so two A's and Premlal. And or you just look up Anandi Premlal and you'll find me all over Google, too.
Okay, so I think you're going to have a lot more helping hands in the dirt with you and in the policymakers' offices and all over the place, because I think this is, it's really exciting. Anandi, I'm sorry, but we are out of time for today, but thank you so much for coming into the studio to talk with me. I want to thank Jack Ainsley for engineering today's show. This has been such a nice show, and I hope that her story has helped to inspire you to create your own Just Food story. You can always find archived episodes of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org or as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And remember, if you have any questions for the program, you can call in live at 718-497-2100.
2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. See you next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
This thing. I'm ready whenever you are, Rita. I don't really need. Okay.
I'm Jackie Berger, host of Just Food Stories. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
One shot. Look at that. You're a pro.
Oh, wow. I wish I was a pro. I love this so much. I want to do this full time.
Maybe you will. What are you moving on to now?
Moving